It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4-inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Trey Schaap. The fields have been announced for the 2026 Jackson T. Stevens Cup to be played at PGA Frisco Fields Ranch East. It offers a striking stage for the Jackson T. Stevens Cup. The course was designed by Gil Hance and uses the natural landscape along with strategic bunkering and steady Texas winds to create a true test of championship golf. Once part of the historic headquarters ranch, it is now the home of the PGA of America. Speaking of the PGA of America, Fields Ranch East will be next year's host of the PGA Championship there at PGA Frisco in Frisco, Texas. The teams competing in the 2026 Jackson T. Stevens Cup on the women's side include Florida State University, Stanford, University of Oregon, University of South Carolina, the University of Texas, and Wake Forest University. On the men's side, it's a big Texas flair with Rice University, SMU, Texas A&M, the University of Houston, and the University of Texas, joined by the University of Utah. HBCU individual competitors and the Service Academy individual competitors will be released at a later time. We will be sure and update you right here on From the Shortgrass. The Jackson T. Stevens Cup started out at the Aleutian Club, then went to Seminole in South Florida, Juno Beach to be exact, then Trinity Forest in Dallas, then it went to Oklahoma City Golf and Country Club. Last year, it was at Shore Acres, just north of Chicago, Illinois, and then this year, back for the second time in the great state of Texas at PGA Frisco Fields Ranch East. Play begins on Monday, September the 14th and runs through Wednesday, September the 16th. On Sunday, September the 13th, it is Jack's Day Youth Clinic with the first tee. That begins at 10 a.m., followed by the College Jam at 1:15. The College Jam Awards reception is that afternoon at 5:30. Stroke play begins on Monday, September the 14th at 7 a.m. The second round tee times start at noon. Golf Channel will have live coverage from 4 to 7 o'clock. And then on Tuesday, September the 15th, stroke play round 3 begins at 11 a.m. Golf Channel's live coverage is from 3 to 6. They will have the trophy presentation for the individual champions. And then you get to match play on Wednesday, September the 16th. 10:30 a.m. is when the match play tee times begin. 3 to 6 o'clock for the Golf Channel live coverage. The trophy presentation will be that afternoon on the Golf Channel as well. Tickets will go on sale soon. We will keep you updated. You can get down to PGA Frisco and Fields Ranch East for the Jackson T. Stevens Cup, the 2026 playing of that event. Coming up on this edition of From the Shortgrass, I sit down with U.S. amateur and British amateur champion Steve Melnick. Steve Melnick, you might remember the name, a broadcaster, broadcasted for ABC, CBS, and now he does work for the SEC Network during their championship golf of the women's and men's golf championships that they put on. Steve Melnick coming up after the break. UAMS Ortho Now, now open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports, work, or anything else, go in and see the best in orthopedic care. No appointment needed. Ortho Now, open Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, Saturday, 8 to noon, conveniently located at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. For more information, call 501-686-TOSH. That's 501-686-8674.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
This is Justin Akre. If shoulder or elbow pain is affecting your daily life, the fellowship-trained physicians at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health are here to help. They offer advanced care for injuries, arthritis, rotator cuff problems, and more, helping you feel better, move better, and get back to everyday life. Call 501-686-TOSH today to schedule your appointment. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health, Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I'm your host, Trey Schaap. Steve Melnick won the 1965 Georgia Open as an amateur. He also won the 1969 USAM and the Western Amateur. He won the Eastern Amateur in 1970 and the prestigious British Amateur in 1971. He played on two United States Walker Cup teams, the winners in 1969 and competed in 1971. He has worked for ABC, ESPN, CBS, and now does work for the SEC Network covering their women's and men's golf championships. I had a chance to sit down with Steve Melnick at Sea Island Golf Club during the playing of the SEC Men's Golf Championship. This is part one of that sit-down interview with Mr. Melnick. On the tee, Steve Melnick. Mr. Melnick, thanks for joining me on this edition of From the Shortgrass. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club and fell in love with this game?
Trey, my parents were really good players. My dad really learned the game as a caddy in Western Massachusetts. He grew up in a little town of Ludlow. He met my mom during the service when he was stationed here. She was a great athlete. She is a former Georgia State amateur champion, runner-up twice more. She beat she lost to Marilena Falk and Louise Suggs, but beat Eileen Stubb at Augusta Country Club. And she was actually asked or invited to be among the founders of the LPGA. I came along, that ruined that dream. So. I guess I was 7 or 8 years old. I would tag along with my folks when they go play golf, and I used to hang around the putting green at Brunswick Country Club for hours on end. I was just happy as I could be, and so it's funny, I've come full circle. I've rejoined Brunswick Country Club, and it's an old honor roll course with great bones, got great greens, and so I'm very blessed to have a lot of really good clubs of which I'm a member that I can play.
Were you self-taught, or did you, like you said, chipping, putting around the country club? Did you kind of self-teach yourself, or did your father, mom, or?
A little bit of both. They showed me how to grip the club, how to stand to it, position the ball, and I was fortunate that I had great fundamentals. Also, it was conferred at birth. I had really good hand and eye coordination. I could play all sports. I lettered in four sports in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
What all four sports?
Football, basketball, golf, and track. I threw the discus in track.
Okay,
you can stump a lot of people on that one. Well, I didn't win any races running, okay? But I love basketball. Even today, basketball is my favorite sport. Absolutely love it. I got a couple of scholarship offers to play basketball, but they were mid-majors at best. I still remember who they were. They were Western Carolina and Austin Peay.
Oh, wow. Let's go Peay.
Yeah. But at the last minute, the University of Florida offered me a golf scholarship, and I am forever grateful because they gave me an opportunity to be successful.
Brunswick, Georgia, close to Florida. Closer to Florida than to Athens, Georgia.
Much so. It's 150 miles from Gainesville to here in Brunswick and St. Simons.
So that was an easy choice, I guess?
Very. Yep. Worked out great. I was part of a great freshman class down there. No one knew who I was. I didn't play any junior golf.
Okay.
I actually worked my way through high school and in college. I worked every summer. I was a draftsman at a manufacturing company in Brunswick, and a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but I was very, I guess you'd call, unpolished, so I went down as a freshman. The best thing that happened to me, Trey, it's funny how things work out. The week that I checked into my dorm at Florida, Bob Murphy won the U.S. Amateur, at Southern Hills. He was a senior. I was a freshman. Back then, freshmen couldn't play varsity ball.
Mm.
But I was the only one either too dumb or too stupid. But I would play with Bob every opportunity I could. We'd play for a dollar or two. He beat me like a redheaded stepchild every time we played together. But I became a better player because of Bob. And I'm forever indebted to his offering me suggestions, advice, whatever. So I'll never forget that.
When did you really start trying to compete at? Because you won the Georgia Open at the age of 18.
It was really a surprise and shock to a lot of people. Won it in Waycross, and that was really a couple of weeks before I went down to the University of Florida. So felt pretty good about my game. Again, as I said, freshmen couldn't compete back then. And, boy, starting our sophomore year, the guys that came in with me, and we had the best team, and I was the only guy, honestly, that sort of made it to the next level. And they were just really good guys. We all got along. They were good players, but not great players. I don't mean that in a negative way, but we were second in the NCAA our sophomore year. We won in our junior year, and we were fourth our senior year. And we were the first ever sport at the University of Florida to win an NCAA championship.
What was that feeling like?
Well, I'm going to tell you a story, which kind of puts it in perspective. You know, golf wasn't like it is today.
Oh, no.
We didn't play the Sea Islands of the world and places like that. In fact, I won the SEC championship on a course in Knoxville. It was so bad, they bulldozed it later that year, turned it into a apartment complex, I think. But, no, it just worked out great, and I'm just so blessed in so many ways. Florida really changed the trajectory of my life. I met my wife, Debbie, down there. I was at ATO, and in fact, in my pledge class with Steve Spurrier. We walked into the ATO house together.
HBC.
Yeah, the HBC. We became great friends, roommates, spent time together, played more golf than you can imagine. I just spent the weekend with him about 6 weeks ago, went down there for the Kentucky game. And, you know, I'm so blessed. I mean, at our age, here we are. It's a friendship that's lasted a lifetime. And I think the world of him. He's one of my favorite people.
What is Coach's game like?
When he was in school, he did not play golf prior to coming to Florida. He picked up a friend's set of clubs without any experience, and within a year was breaking par. You talking about somebody that had good hand and eye coordination,
athletic.
He was all state at Tennessee in football, basketball, and baseball. He could have pitched at Florida baseball. He was that good. And he came here. We had a summer tournament called the Golden Isles Tournament, and he came up from school and loved it here. After I left and moved down to Jacksonville work, he kept coming back. He loved my dad. Actually, for two reasons. My dad made homemade beer. And like Steve says, I always love your dad's beer. One, because it's cold. Two, because it's free. Okay,
yeah, two good reasons.
But he played so well in the Golden Isles one year, he got beat in a playoff by Andy Bean, who grew up one island south of here down at Jekyll Island. So Steve could play, and even when he was a coach, we'd play all over the place, and he could shoot in the mid to low 70s. Probably the most competitive person I've ever been around in my life.
I remember that him, Gus Malzahn, Hugh Freeze, and I believe Mark Stoops, before the SEC spring meetings, back when he was coaching, they had a standing tee time on a Tuesday morning. They would have the first round on, I believe, the Raven course there at Sandestin.
Yeah.
And they would go out and play before the meeting started, and they played fast, like 2.5 hours.
Was this SEC media or media days?
Spring meetings.
Yeah.
SEC spring meetings.
That didn't surprise me at all. We've snuck out and played more rounds of golf that no one knew about. So
he plays pretty fast, doesn't he?
Plays very fast. Yeah, plays very fast.
All right, let's go back to you and your career. You win the national championship at Florida. You start playing amateur tournaments as well.
Let me stop you right there.
Okay.
You asked me a question I failed to answer. Buster Bishop was our golf coach. We were so excited after winning the national championship. We were in Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is the most godforsaken place. And the golf course was terrible. If you hit it out of play, you hit it in briars and whatever. Roadrunners were everywhere. So we win the championship. We go back to the room. We call Ray Graves, who was then our athletic director. Buster goes, Ray, we won. there was this long silence, and Ray goes, "What'd you win?"
Oh, no. What did you win?
So Goff wasn't at the sort of the top of his interest level at that time.
Now you have ADs that hop on a private jet to there to make sure that if their team's competing in that final match.
Well, just came from the SEC women's event. Scott Strickland came down to watch our girls play. You know, Greg Sankey was there, and it's changed a lot. And that's why I just so love whatever involvement I can at the college level.
So you play some major amateur events. You win the U.S. amateur. You win the British amateur at Carnoustie. Over there, they call it Carnasty. What a place.
The U.S. was at Oakmont. The British was a tough one, too. I would never have played the British amateur had I not made my second Walker Cup team at the Old Course. And it was a week after the Walker Cup, so we stayed over and played. So I was, again, lucky that happenstance being what it was.
What was it like being on those Walker Cup teams, being a part of a team environment, kind of like at the University of Florida?
It's the best experience any amateur golfer could ever have. The Walker Cup is the very essence of competition at the amateur level. And I'm such a big fan of the Walker Cup. I think I've either played in, attended, or broadcast now 13 Walker Cups. I was at Cypress Point last fall. In fact, of course, we're here at Sea Island now, and one of our team members at Florida is Luke Poulter, Ian's son. He was on the GB&I Walker Cup team. So I got to spend some time with him out there. But I would say that the Walker Cup we had at National Golf Links in 2013 and the one at Cypress Point last fall were probably the two best Walker Cups ever on the U.S. side. Obviously, the Old Course would be my choice over there, but it's the best.
What do you remember about winning the USAM at Oakmont? Before it became match play, it was strictly stroke play then.
Yeah, there was an eight-year period when the USGA contested the event as stroke play, as you said. I just knew after playing a round at Oakmont that par was my best friend. It was stroke play, and there were only four rounds under par the entire tournament. I was fortunate enough to have two of them, and only one player broke 70, shot 69, so that's how hard it was. I shot two over par, one by five. To this day, it's the hardest golf course I could ever imagine playing.
You turned professional after your win of the British Amateur. You finished low-am at the Masters. You finished low-am at the British Open before. What was it like being in Butler Cabin before your broadcasting career as the low amateur at Augusta National?
It was pretty neat. Let me circle back and tell you a great story about the Masters and playing as an amateur.
Staying in the crow's nest?
Well, let me tell you another part of that. I registered early, and Mr. Roberts happened to be there. Well, let me back up even further. My single most prized possession golf-related is a letter I got from Bob Jones after winning the amateur at Oakmont, and he congratulated me. Back then, they didn't call it the U.S. amateur. It was the national amateur. So the letter's in my study at home here, and he said he hoped his health would allow him to welcome me to the tournament next spring. But he said, if not, I'll make sure Mr. Roberts, Cliff, he said, would look after me. So I checked in early. Mr. Roberts took me, said, follow me. And instead of going to the crow's nest, he put me in a member's room right next to him.
Oh, wow.
And I was more than a little intimidated. But as it turned out, Trey, we had this odd relationship. I was too dumb or naive. He didn't intimidate me like I thought he would. He was really a nice guy. We ended up having drinks together. We had dinner together. And I'll never forget a Tuesday morning. I'd gotten there Thursday and played through the weekend. So we happened to walk out of our rooms at the same time, and I said, where are you off to today, Mr. Roberts? He looked at me and said, try to get you a damn good pairing. Well, he did. He paired me with Nicklaus.
Oh, wow.
So fast forward to Thursday morning. Jack and I actually played of our own noon, and I met Jack for the first time on the first tee.
The very first time you met him?
Never knew him. I mean, I obviously looked up to him. And from that round of golf, we have become lifelong friends. But the story inside the story is that he hit first off the first tee. I hit next, and I hit this toe pop up. I'll never forget it. If the infield fly rule had been in effect, I'd have been called out. Okay. I had a 6 iron of the green. He had a wedge, if it helps you any.
Oh, wow.
But I made a 30 footer for birdie on the first hole. Got off to a great start.
So, a great second shot.
I had a good second shot. Yeah. And it was really a tough, windy day. I shot 73. He shot 71. So, we go to the press room. And we're in the press room, and, you know, most of the questions were directed to Jack. And finally, one of the writers says, "So, Jack, how did you and Steve get paired together?" And he looked at me, and he looked back at the writer, he goes, "By weight." I knew right then, Trey, we were going to be good friends,
yeah.
And we were. Later that summer, I played all my practice rounds at the U.S. Open with him, stayed with Jack and Barbara at the British Open at the old course, and spent time with him in the fall, and I can't say enough good things about him. Debbie and I spent time with Barbara and her family this year, a couple of weeks ago at the Masters. Jack was busy doing some other stuff, but it's a friendship born out of respect. You know, he's never asked anything of me, neither I of him, and we just have great memories together. That's what makes this game so special.
I was going to say, isn't it funny how golf kind of leads you in your life, because they bring people in and out of your life.
No question.
Like, if I didn't play this game, I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now.
Exactly right. A great example. Ben Crenshaw and I were great friends as amateurs. He's a little younger than I am. When Debbie and I first married, Ben was the first person to introduce himself to Debbie. And Ben and Debbie have had this fabulous relationship for now 50 years. So we see Ben last Masters a couple weeks ago. And it's like I saw Ben the previous week. You know, it just started up right where he left off.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Watson and I were close, worked with Ian Baker Finch. We spent time together. Nance sat down with Debbie and me. And only in golf, Trey, could you have that kind of relationship. It's out of respect. It's out of love of the game. And we just honor the traditions of the game, I think, through our friendship.
You turned professional after your British amateur win. What was that like?
Honestly, as I look back, it was a mistake. I did it out of default, and I'm telling on myself here. I never wanted to be a professional golfer. Bobby Jones was my hero. I had won those two events we talked about, and I was working for an insurance company in Jacksonville. See, when I graduated from Florida, I went to work.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about playing the tour. I didn't particularly like the insurance side of it, but I didn't really have a mentor that sort of kind of guided me. And after the British Am, some agents reached out to me, manufacturers reached out to me, hey, if you want to go play the tour, blah, blah, blah. So I did it. And it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction. As I look back, I wish I hadn't, because I'm really a purist. I got my amateur status back after a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And 26 years, I was a USGA committeeman on the Public Golf Committee, then the Library and Museum Committee. I started a mid-Am event at Timaquana about 15 years ago. We had it about 10 years. It was great. Both my boys are very active in amateur golf. My son Dalton in Atlanta just went on the Georgia State Golf Association board. Butler here is one of the leaders of the first tee. So I think that the value system that either Debbie and I created for them, or they through golf, we're very proud of them.
Yeah, that's awesome. When did you start your broadcasting career?
Literally happened because of an accident. I fell and broke my elbow at Phoenix Country Club. And on the plane ride back, I kind of made a list of things I thought I could do, because I knew my golf career was over.
Mm-hmm.
And broadcasting was one of them. And I knew Pat Summerall. Pat was from Lake City. And I said, Pat,
Arkansas Razorback.
Yep, you got it. I said, you know, I was president of my student body at the Glenn Academy here in Brunswick, and I was very comfortable speaking. And I thought, well, maybe I can sort of parlay that into a broadcast career. And I reached out to Pat, and he said, well, I'll talk to Frank Chukinian. Frank kind of told me to go pound sand, and I asked him a second and third time. Finally, he got tired of me
asking,
so he let me work a couple events. And then the third event that I worked was the Masters. He put me on the 10th hole by myself, and at the time, I really kind of thought it was a throwaway hole, because, you know, once you threw 10, people were just focused on the remaining back nine. But this year, that year was a playoff between Dan Pohl and Craig Stadler, And I did a good job setting it up. And then when Sadler putted out to win, I did not know what to say. I was too scared to say anything. So I said nothing, Trey. And I said nothing for about a minute and a half. Finally, Frank said to Brent Musburger, he said, pick it up in the butler cabin and throw it to commercial. He came back on the headset just for me, and he's a rookie. You knocked it out of the park. You kept your damn mouth shut. So I'm convinced today. I've been in the business kind of off and on for 44 years now. It's because I said nothing. True.
Longevity.
Absolutely true. And whenever I did Augusta the next 9 years, and I said less at Augusta than any event that we ever did, Trey, because everybody that watches Augusta National, the Masters, they know what the 11th and 12th hole looks like. That's where I covered Amen Corner for 9 years. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say much.
You didn't have to.
You did, exactly. I would say wind out of the right, Fowler on the tee with a 7-iron on 12. You know, that's it. I just didn't think that words could take the place of pictures that are just magnificent.
But there are some words, Mr. Melnick, that we remember. There are some words, Steve, that we remember so vividly, like 86, when your good friend Jack Nicklaus won.
I was there.
Vern Lundquist. Yes, sir. Yeah,
sure.
Tiger Woods in 2005. The chip. Vern Lundquist again. In your life. I mean, those are iconic moments. Sure. But you let it breathe.
Let it breathe. I had four playoffs. I had three others after I moved into Amen Corner. I had Fowler winning twice, and I had the Mize chip in.
Yeah.
And honestly, Taylor Zarza here a couple of years ago reminded me of something I said that I don't remember saying. He kind of threw this line out. He said, you had the greatest line ever. And I go, what are you talking about? Well, when Mize pitched in, there, if you listen, I screamed. I became a fan. I went from being a broadcaster to a fan because Norman was there. I didn't particularly like Norman a whole lot. And then I said nothing once again. Finally, I said, and I don't remember saying it, words do not do justice to the greatness of that shot. I didn't say another word after that.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need to say anything.
Mm-mm.
And I hate what's happened today. And I think part of it's just what I call the ESPN culture. You know, fill the event with words and talk loud. And, you know, that's not me. And golf is more reverent and respectful. And I'm not one who wants to say things unnecessarily.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think, especially at Augusta National, let the pictures, what you're watching, tell the story. And the fans, the reaction of the patrons, tell the story.
Sure.
I think that makes for a great golf tournament.
Nicklaus Hole on 86 that you mentioned, he had birdied 9, 10, and he birdied 11 my hole. Again, I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera followed him from the green as he walked up the slope to the 12th tee. And the only thing I said was the patron stand is one to the greatest player in the game. What else do you say?
Not much. Not much.
You don't want to.
Mm-mm.
You just mess it up.
This is Justin Akre. If shoulder or elbow pain is affecting your daily life, the fellowship-trained physicians at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health are here to help. They offer advanced care for injuries, arthritis, rotator cuff problems, and more, helping you feel better, move better, and get back to everyday life. Call 501-686-TOSH today to schedule your appointment. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
That's all the time for this edition of From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Part 2 of my sit-down with Steve Melnick will come your way in our next episode. Real quick, a shout-out to the University of Arkansas, Arkansas State, UAPB, and Little Rock. Their men's golf programs are headed to the NCAA Regionals with a chance to advance to an NCAA championship. And Little Rock and the University of Arkansas, the only two schools to get both their men's and women's teams into an NCAA regional. Congratulations to them. When you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You have been listening to From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.